First came Kenneth Clark's Civilization. Then came David Attenborough's Life on Earth. Now, BBC Radio 4 presents the ultimate quest for knowledge. Richard Herring's Manhood.
Hello, I'm Richard Herring. Over the next 4 weeks, I want to take you on an epic journey to discover what it means to be a man in 90s Britain. Because personally, I'm confused. On the one hand, I want to try to be a sensitive and caring human being. And on the other, I want to run round Clapham Common in just my pants, spearing mammoths. This is my personal odyssey through this hotbed of controversy, to see if I can come to some conclusions and hopefully justify my pathetic, childish, irresponsible, wimpy existence. This journey begins with one of the few things that women agree men are good at: immaturity. When I was a child, I spake as a child, I understood as a child, I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. But as I was putting them away, I thought, hey, some of these childish things are pretty good. There's Buckaroo in here, Sabutio, a space hopper. And then I realised that now I am a man, I can afford those expensive electronic childish things that my mum and dad wouldn't let me have. My first task was to see if I could find out why I'm so obsessed with toys, games and messing around in general. So I went to the Double Six Games Club off Oxford Street in London. Right, I've just come down the stairs into this cave-like underground cellar that is the Double Six Games Club. There's quite a lot of people here already. There's men in suits. But running around between the tables are waiters, maitre d's in their flamboyant velvet jackets and bow ties. They're all carrying restaurant-style menus, which I can see some of the punters here looking through to choose which game they're going to try tonight. It's a restaurant of games. And I'm here to speak with one of the guys who runs the club, and he's known as Figs.
I've had phone calls at home at 11:30 in the evening from people asking me, where can I get hold of Formula One? You know, and these people are phoning up at 11:30, so obviously there's this huge world out there. You know, they are being bought up at car boot sales. I know that they're harder to get hold of now. You know, I have to go down to the great West Sussex town of Wittering, actually, now to buy my games from my car boots, because, God bless their souls, they're still a bit old down there, and I don't actually realise that they're worth some money now.
What would you recommend from this menu, though? What would you be your favourite game in the whole of the...
The irony is, we've been doing this now a year, and probably the amount of times I've actually sat down with a game, you can count on one hand, one finger even. So, as far as I'm concerned, if I actually go home now and think of playing a game, then the whole thing turns my stomach.
You say it turned your stomach. You've turned this sort of big games businessman evil figure taking the money off the kids. Has it made games tainted for you? You loved games once, and now you wish you could never see another game again, I imagine.
It's more, I think Steve, one of the other promoters, kind of summed it up tonight as he was counting the kaplunk sticks for the umpteenth time. It's like, I can't counting anymore, and it's the fact that he has to count in 30 sticks and 30 balls, so we're in the mechanics now of the games world rather than the sort of throbbing heart of the games world.
What's your average sort of punter looking for spiritually, philosophically, if you will, from playing your games, do you think?
Laughter is the dominant sound down in the club, and I think that kind of sums up the whole thing. It isn't necessarily board games. It isn't necessarily people sat round being sad anoraks in corners. It's the fact that it's a good laugh.
As Wordsworth once said, the child is the father of man, and that's why he spends all his time playing with the train set he supposedly bought for his son. But all the people at the Games Club were under 30 years old. Can immaturity really last? Once, when I was being particularly childish at school, Mr. Habgood, my maths teacher, gave me a dire warning that still haunts my dreams. One day, Richard Herring, he said, you'll wake up and find no one thinks your antics are funny anymore. But was he right? Will I have to grow up one day? Or can men like me remain immature their whole lives? To find out, I went to meet Charlie Bray, who's 76, and was the World Conquer Champion, 1979 and 1985.
Various tools in here. For instance, A conker drilling voice. Now, all conkers are drilled with a 3/16 drill.
Right.
Because this is exactly the same circumference as a leather bootlace. A hand drill, if you're out somewhere where there's no electricity available, then I'll use that, you see.
That's for if you're in a conker championship in some remote African
That's
country.
That's right, yeah.
And Charlie had dressed up for us specially in the suit that he wears at the World Conker Championships. He had a hat, which he'd stuck conkers all over. He had a shirt with conkers sewn into it. He even had a bow tie made of conkers. His trousers had conkers all over them, and his shoes were covered with conkers.
So, Charlie, what's the fascination with conkers especially?
They're such pretty little chaps, aren't they? Nice and brown and shiny and round.
When did you first play a game of conkers?
A game of conkers? Oh, I suppose when I was about 7 or 8 years old at school.
So did you realise when you were seven that you were particularly adept at it? Do you know someone like
I was quite a dab hand at school, yes. Oh, yes. And you see, in school conkers, it's a question of building up the total on your conker.
Mm-hmm.
When you break somebody, it's a oneer. And then you go on and it's a twoer. Now, if you meet somebody who's got a fiver and you've already got a sixer, you're on an 11er if you can break his, you see.
Yeah. Yeah.
I had a 32er once.
Oh, yeah.
And I took a swipe at another lad's with it. And it slipped out of my hand and went straight through the school window, smashed the glass in the window. I had the cane and my conker disappeared into the waste paper basket.
Oh. But it didn't put you off, though.
More determined.
An element of danger
to
the game of conkers there.
Yeah.
Now, I understand that you can't give away any of the secrets that have made you world champion, but are there any basic techniques?
There are different techniques. I'm known as a side swinger.
So Charlie's brought me outside to put me through rigorous training to try and become as good a conker player as he. And he's made a special training device. Now, this is a sort of a metal stand that's about, 4 foot high. And then hanging down from it is... It isn't a conker, no. It's on a leather string, like all the conkers. But it's not a conker, it's a rubber ball.
It's a squash ball.
Squash ball. Why is that? Why not a conker?
Well, the reason I put a squash ball on there, when you're practicing, if you hang a conker up there, the moment you smash it, it's gone. You could get through 50 or 60 conkers like that, couldn't you? But that squash ball, he sits there forever.
There we go, well, I'll go with that. That's about...
Yeah, right. That's about right, yeah.
Right, so then I hold that like that between my forefingers, like a sort of cigarette, but good for you, because it's a conker. And you coming from a side like this, yeah?
I do, yes. Yeah. But
I'll try it from the side.
You to use your
You're the world champion. I'm not going to argue with you. No, I missed very badly there, but I got a good swish. Too low. And I got the sound recordist.
That's a snag. That's too high.
Yeah, too high. I was venting my anger there. You must never be angry, I guess, when you're playing conkers. You've got to keep your emotions hidden.
But just as in those kung fu films where the master has to fight his young apprentice, if I was to learn anything, I had to challenge Charlie.
I'm confident, I think, and, you know, without... being presumptuous, Charlie. I think I can take him. It's like Rocky IV. I'm like a sort of Russian super-programmed conker player. And this is Rocky here, Charlie Rocky. See if he can take me. If I beat you, do I become world champion immediately?
Well, I never put my title at stake. It'll be a friendly match.
Okay. Well, I'm confident. I can do it. I've got youth on my side. I've got good wrists for some reason. They're very strong. Don't know why.
But to see who won this David and Goliath style battle and to see what it taught me, you must wait, my friends. There is a serious downside to men's immaturity. Their use of violence as a solution to all problems, their cavalier attitude to relationships, their desire to go out with a load of other immature men, get drunk and run round town naked with traffic cones on their heads. And the people who usually have to pick up the pieces afterwards are women. So to find out what the grown-up sex think about men's immaturity, I talked to Mary O'Riordan, editor of More magazine.
I guess it's kind of the gang mentality that always surprises me, that makes me feel that men are sometimes a bit of an alien force. Getting dressed up in these ridiculous clothing and going off to football terraces at the weekend and jumping up and down and screaming and shouting obscenities. And I cannot imagine women behaving like that.
Karen Krasanovich, agony aunt of Sky magazine.
When There's that old phrase, women are the only adults. And I think it's sort of true that men are allowed to play until they die.
And writer Kate Withers.
I think that's nice they're different. I think what is sad is that they're running the world.
People often say that if children ruled the world with their innocent wisdom, it'd be a much better place to live. They are wrong, of course. Instead of having wars about oil and lines on maps, we'd have wars because the President of America had said the President of Russia smelled of poo.
I mean, what I think you don't get, I mean, you were talking about the excessively tidy man, what I think you very rarely find is the happy medium. You either get the guy who sort of, like, throws all his crap all over everywhere and doesn't...
Happy medium is called woman.
But on the other hand, if a man is tidy... then he's a sergeant major.
Well, it's almost like if you're going to be fully adult, you have to integrate, you have to be balanced. I think that's very, very easy to be an extremist. Being balanced is what's difficult in life. And I think that when you're talking about immaturity, that is what immaturity is. It's the swinging of the pendulum, whether you're being messy, a good cook, a bad cook, a slob, whatever.
What other kind of obsessive behavior do men have? Any
collecting things. I don't mean like dust. But,
gadgets.
You know.
They like gadgets, don't they?
Yeah.
They have much more fascination with technology. They're completely useless, but they just like having gadgets.
I think so too. And also if they're into any sport, like for example golfing, they'll have every single golf thing they can get.
Yes.
You know, the club that breaks when
Absolutely.
You swing it. And the club that gets
all
the balls out of the trees and stuff.
I had a boyfriend who was into remote control racing car racing.
I feel for
you. Yeah, they're about so big. They're about sort of like 2 feet long, these racing cars. And it was really funny. It was the only thing in the world that you get up at 6 o'clock in the morning for.
Yeah.
And they traipsed out to this sand dune somewhere out by Weston-super-Mare, him and his brother and his dad, and they all had a team. And all these men would all converge on this sand dune on freezing cold winter mornings and just watch this bloody thing go just on.
See, how many train spotters in the world are women? I bet there aren't very many. I bet they're mainly men.
How do they breed then?
Yeah, yeah. And women aren't obsessive about anything, are they? Anyway, don't women like immature men? I try to make the point that many intelligent, ambitious women I know are in relationships with little boys. Little boys who won't eat their vegetables, who pull sulky faces to get their own way. People like me are providing a service to these women. They're able to satisfy their 20-something maternal instinct without going through the pain of childbirth and without having to sacrifice their careers. My male friends and I are the radical feminists of the late 20th century.
I don't think that's true. I think the sort of men that career women are attracted to are probably actually much more like themselves than the sort of man you're describing.
I think
I'm not going to score tonight then.
I think the reason women like men childish is because they're safe that way and they're kind of a bit controllable that way. Yeah.
And even more important, when they're soft and when they're being real and being very, well, if you want to say immature, maybe infantile, maybe childlike, maybe childish, you can talk to
them
and they are
them.
Actually, exactly, you can be close to them. And they can talk about their emotions in whatever way they can.
Well, I've got to argue about this, actually, because I think it's a bit unfair to equate maturity with everything that women do.
Are women really mature? Or do they just think they are? And whose fault is it that men are immature anyway? Who makes us like this? Is it nature or nurture? Are immature men born or made? Shakespeare tackled this nature-nurture thing in a lot of his plays. Let's take the all-spiritual Ariel and the all-animal Caliban from The Tempest. Who would most women pick as a partner if they had to make a choice? I think they'd take Caliban and hope they could persuade him to take a bath and improve his table manners a bit. They like the challenge. Anyway, who cares what women think with their clever, reasoned arguments? Let's get back to the important things in life, like the conker match.
All the conkers are concealed in a canvas bag.
Yeah.
Two contestants. Coin.
Coin.
A coin is tossed. Now you shape heads or tails.
I'll have heads. Oops. Here we go. It's tails.
It's tails. So
it's a good foreboding.
What happens now, I have a choice of the first conker out of the bag.
Yeah.
And a choice of whether I hold or strike. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So I decide to hold. You have three goes then,
right.
At mine.
And then you have three when I'm finished. Here we go then. First shot, obviously, got my eye in. And I've smashed the underbelly of Charlie's Conker's. Smashed a bit. Looks like it's full of sawdust.
I think I'll give in at that.
What, in that there's nothing left?
Nothing left.
So I've won. That means I've won.
Well done.
Thank you very much. I'm sure he let me win that. He threw that one, I think.
Not at all.
Bruce Grobbelaar there.
Not at all.
BBC are paying you, aren't they, to make me look good. There you go. The world champion, 1979, 1986. Humbled there before my coming. So that's a oner now, then.
Gotta be.
It might be just a game of conkers, but I've been going around telling everyone that I beat the Conker World Champion 1979 and 1985. And I'm keeping my winning conker to show to my grandchildren. Plus, we had a lot of fun, Charlie and me. I can see that immaturity has got its drawbacks, but no one seems to concentrate on its advantages. Charlie's wife may think he's stupid, immature even, but to me, Charlie personifies the essence of the good side of immaturity, the laughter, the love of life, treating the serious light-heartedly and the light-hearted seriously, and having the ability to do something because you like doing it without worrying about whether you look like an idiot. Now, if that isn't being grown up, I don't know what is. As Kipling once said, if you can dream and not make dreams your master, if you can think and not make thoughts your aim, if you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two impostors just the same, and if you can go around wearing a suit entirely covered in conkers without concern for what others might think of you just because it's fun, yours is the earth and all that's in it. And which is more? You'll be a man, my son.